September 11th, 2008.
In September 11th to provide, yes, and I refused.
You refused?
Why? I refused.
Why is that?
Because I did comply.
You felt that this
yes.
sprinkler system, even
exactly.
though... Okay, so that explains why you're being billed for the entire period.
That is correct.
Refused to comply.
That is correct.
And then did you bring that to the Fire Code Board of Appeals on October 14th?
No, because the Fire Code of Court of Appeals, it was only two issues to be addressed, and those were the two citations that I had received, nothing else.
So let me make sure, on the premises right now, you do or do not have a fire watch?
Right now, as we're speaking, Mayor, there's a fire watch, as we speak right now.
Provided by you?
No, by the city. By the way, I can assure you, the bill so far is over $100,000.
Okay, and you believe that you don't need the fire watch because you've complied with the rules in other ways?
God, my witness.
Okay. So with the sprinkler system and everything else, you feel...
I have these two gentlemen to testify right. to that.
Do you, gentlemen, would you like to add anything? You concur with what Mr. Pappas says?
Yes, sir. I'd like to add something. My name's Chuck Hagley. I am a fire protection company. I started installing sprinklers in 1967. 1975, I got my license, my state license, and I've been working in Portland for all these years. And about 1982, when Ted bought that property, he did a remodel for the restaurant, and we went in under the benefit of a permit and modified the sprinklers for him. And Portland requires your sprinkler system to be tested once a year. It's called a 3C test. A licensed contractor has to come through, and we look at everything, make sure nobody's painted any sprinkler heads or moved anything around. We do that once a year, and I do that with Ted. The two sprinkler heads that are missing, the scenario is just about like this. You have an exit way right here, and you have a shelf like there with sprinkler heads right there. Those two are on there. Then you also have sprinkler heads up high like that. When I did my next yearly inspection, I'd tell Ted he should have had two heads up there. But however, as a fire science, if this table caught on fire right here, these sprinkler heads are going to go off way faster than those. So what I did, I said, you know, we're going to have a problem here. I said, we need to get some expert advice. So we went down and I hired D. Lockwood. I've had my engineer, designers go down. I said, I want to know every piece of pipe in that building. Every inch of that building we're going to put on a blueprint. We put every piece of pipe on that blueprint, and then we did our hydraulic calculations to show that it would put a fire out. The piping in there exceeds the national code as far as water supply. Then I got D. Lockwood to come down there, and we walked that entire building. Every square inch of that, we double-checked every sprinkler head to make sure that someday when we got here that we could have some kind of document to say, is that building meeting code? And that's the stamped letter.
So would it normally be the normal course of action that if you disagree with the fire inspector that you would go to the fire board, whatever the right title is? Is that the normal course of appeal?
Well, I don't know about appeal, but on issues like this, and when I deal with these things daily, is how we look at how the sprinklers are made, manufactured, and their use.
Right, but if there's a disagreement between you and you and representing a variety of clients and the city's fire inspection team, if there's a disagreement, the normal course of action is to appeal it to the fire board, correct?
I've never appealed to the city. I've appealed to the state, but I think you're correct. There is appeal. I think there is an appeal process in place.
Okay, and why haven't you exercised your right to appeal?
Because I put the trust in the fire department's judgment.
Okay, got it.
Simple as that.
So is there any other substantive issue, any other substance that you want to make sure we get out on the table?
Chuck, I just wanted to ask, were you aware that he had opened up the atrium?
That's where we're talking about, above the depth, that the head that were missing on the top.
And were any of the sprinkler systems disconnected at the time the atrium
was
opened?
That system, in all these years, that system had never been, other than those two heads that were missing, when they took the water or something. But that system had been active all these years. It's tested. And this fire watch deal, if that sprinkler head right there goes off, it's got a dialer, and it will dial that fire department within 1 minute. That's our law. Well, when you have a fire watch walking around here, and if there was a fire up there, he's not even going to know. The fire system will automatically call the fire.
But the fire heads you're talking about were not in the atrium.
Pardon me?
The fire heads you're talking about were not in the atrium. that you're saying that are adjacent to the they're adjacent to the atrium?
The existing system, any sprinkler head in on any floor, when it goes off, each floor has its own little system.
I understand that, but you're describing sprinkler heads on a floor, not in the atrium.
Avement?
Atrium.
Each room.
Atrium.
Oh, each room sprinkler.
I'm sorry?
All those rooms are sprinklers.
The atrium itself, when he removed the walls for the atrium, there was no coverage then over the area, correct?
Yeah, there were no pipe over the, what do you call it?
Right.
That open area.
So you're aware how fire works, that the heat rises, so that the sprinklers you're describing would not have activated. Because
no, I disagree with you on that. When we do a high-rise building, a brand-new building downtown, and there's nothing in the building, we have to go and we have to put a sprinkler head, and you put a piece of steel just like that. And that catches that heat.
Right.
So,
well, if that same principle, if this caught on fire, the heat's going to be trapped there first and work up there.
And that's why we don't allow you to do fire inspections. That is not the way sprinklers activate.
So, Mr. Pappas,
I made a good living all my life.
You've never been sued, you haven't fought fire.
But you're
not pursuing an appeal because you say you trusted the Fire Bureau,
exactly.
But the Fire Bureau is saying
exactly.
You need to do more.
Exactly.
So tell me how you reconcile the fact that you say you trust the Fire Bureau, but the Fire Bureau has asked you to do more, which is to have a fire watch. So how do you reconcile that you trust the Fire Bureau, but you disagree with them on the fire watch?
I disagree with the fire watch because there is proof here. The only way this fire watch is necessary, they have on their own guidelines.
Okay.
It spelled out. And the guideline says what? Imminent danger. The question is, was there on the building, with the testimony of my fire experts here, was imminent danger for the building? The answer is no.
Are there any other questions?
And may I say also, one more comment. I kept saying from day one, and I asked the fire department, if the atrium needs to be improved right now, whatever it needs, smoke detector, extra more sense, I'll do it tomorrow. Tell me now.
It's fully covered by smoke detector.
Okay. It's fine.
Did you create the atrium permit? Was that all permitted work? Building
all,
permits?
But no. I admitted when I took that wall down, I did not take a permit.
Okay.
I admit that.
All right.
No question about it.
Okay.
But the question is this. You're going to hang me? You're going to shut down my business?
All right.
Excuse me. We have, these drawings have been reviewed and approved by the City of Portland also.
Okay.
And I want to add one other thing, please. The City of Portland should be privileged. They have an excellent fire department. I mean, I work all over the state, and these guys are really great to work with.
Great. So thank you for your testimony. Did you want to add something?
Yes, sir. We did have a permit from the City of Portland to add to the new fire alarm system, and it was final, and we tested out with the City of Portland fires, and it's approved. So our system works 100%.
I have a question. Mr. Pappas, do you or does anybody in the room here have a copy of the Fire Code Board of Appeals record for October 14th hearing, the findings from that?
No, I do not, but I'd be more than happy to go down at the restaurant and get one. But it stated that they suspend those fines, and I should go back 6 months later, okay, 6 months later, to review if I complied with the agreement that I had signed with the fire department, okay? But it was never the issue raised whether or not the fire watch should continue or not discontinue. It was just the agreement that my architect drafted, and it was signed between the fire department and me.
Isn't your point, though, that the fire watch was not needed because the citations were not found?
The fire watch should never be there to begin with. That's my position from day one.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I do want to ask Hank McDonald to come forward because of the some of what was said here could mislead some. Hank is from the Bureau of Development Services, one of our managers up there. Hank?
Good afternoon.
You could
Mayor
just
Adams
briefly kind of
City
describe
members.
what you've identified in the building and what, if anything, has been done to address those issues.
We did go through the building over on 4th and Washington, owned by Mr. Pappas, back in May of 2008.
Sorry, and could you say who you are and who you work for?
I'm Hank McDonald, and I work for the Bureau of Development Services.
Thank you.
At that time, we found that there had been quite extensive work done without permits. We also found that a lot of the original construction had been removed. And due to the age of the building, a lot of this construction didn't have what we would consider a UL fire rating. However, inherently, because of the way the materials that the building was originally built out of, we know that it basically performs like a two-hour fire-rated system. Well, when all that material was removed, basically what we did was we exposed the primary structure of the building so that should a fire occur, that fire would spread very quickly. One of the things that we also noticed was that as a result of the removal of the material and also this wall, there was an atrium created. And so the gentleman that spoke about the fire sprinklers made kind of one error. That construction that was in place would have helped to contain the heat and the gases of a fire, and so the sprinkler heads would probably have gone off. Commissioner Leonard has accurately pointed out that heat, in fact, rises, and so as soon as that heat would hit the ceiling, it will travel to, you know, the path of least resistance to this atrium area. The sprinkler heads in the direct vicinity of a fire would never go off. In fact, quite frankly, I think that a large portion of that building would have to be involved in the fire before even the heads at the top of this created atrium would go off. So basically what we saw was a situation whereby the majority of this building was a considerable hazard to its occupants. Now, we allowed the first and second floor to continue to be used because basically by building code and fire code, it's very difficult to have something in a one- or two-story building that can be considered dangerous because, you know, as a result of, you know, the low height of the building and, you know, the availability of exits, it would be very difficult not to exit those portions of the building fairly rapidly. So that's why we allowed those first two floors to be used. It was never really our intention to shut Mr. Pappas down. In fact, if we're guilty of anything, we're probably guilty of being just a little bit too generous in how we would work with him, because we truly did want to get this building to compliance. We just have had a very difficult time doing that. We do, in fact, have a submittal in at Bureau of Development Services right now that we have reviewed, and we've issued a 55-item check sheet on it. We have not heard back from Mr. Pappas' designer. Mr. Pappas also points out that there were 15 appeal items, but we didn't grant all of those. Some of them were asking for something a bit more than what the code, you know, even as an appeal, you know, we really could reasonably grant. So
what you said extensive unpermitted work.
I
want to make sure, what define extensive?
So when I say extensive,
and how else it might impact the fire safety of the structure?
One of the bits of work that was done, and actually Mr. Pappas had taken out a permit on this through a compliance action earlier on, but he'd never called for any inspections nor had he completed the work. He closed up what had been a mezzanine between the first and second floor, thereby creating an additional floor. So instead of this building being five stories, it's actually now six stories of wood frame construction, a condition that really has never been allowed by any identifiable codes, you know, since the writing of codes back in 1922. In addition to creating that additional floor, he had also changed the occupant classification of the third floor to an A occupancy, which, once again, if we go back through the history of codes, A occupancies traditionally have not been allowed in combustible construction on the third floor because of the spread of the fire, the threat to...
A is public assembly.
Correct. A is basically a high density of people all gathered together in one place. I apologize for using those terms.
Wedding receptions, birthdays, those kinds of things.
Correct. Yeah, like, or, you know, a bar, lounge, dance floor, that sort of thing. So we have a lot of people all together in one place, and we don't allow that necessarily on the third floor in combustible construction because of the threat. The fire
third
was spread
floor
much quicker.
Sprinkler.
That's correct.
The whole building is sprinkled?
The whole building is sprinklered. But we have a considerable concern that should a fire break out in that building, the sprinklers would never have an opportunity to trigger or suppress the fire in a reasonable amount of time.
Are there any other subject area city experts that council would like to bring up to hear from? So we've got how many people signed up to testify?
Six now.
Okay, how many people are here to testify in support of Mr.
Thank you.
Pappas? Okay. Has there been, because I have to try to manage time as well, are there people that would like to testify still after hearing the, you're welcome to come forward. If you've signed up, please come forward and you still want to testify? Yeah, come on up. Or if you think that your point of view has been covered, The rest of you that want to testify, two others, please come up.
The whole fire system is twofold. One is
your name for the record.
Yeah, you got
it. Sorry, Ton Nguyen. Sprinkler system is a suppressant, and we are to detect. And we have smoke detector coverage in the whole building. So he said that if there's a fire, it wouldn't go off, wouldn't set off the sprinkler, but it set off the smoke detector, would set it off first. So we would detect the fire right away. So,
but the smoke detector would, okay, got it. Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome to the City Council. You'll have 3 minutes, and you only need to give us your first and last name.
My name's Amber Blazon. I'm just here to speak to why our business has a financial compromise against it is because of it inaccurate accusations from Jeff Myers and Mike Alderman on that second occasion of October 25th when they came in and said that we were doing food prep in the kitchen and we were not complying with Fire Watch. I attest or assure you that nobody took that Fire Watch more serious than I did when Mike Alderman came in and he taught us what he wanted to do us to do on our own, meaning our own within the Greek cuisine, how he wanted to conduct Fire Watch. I took that very serious. And I kept his rules that I don't have them with me now, but I kept them with me just to make sure that we were always in compliance. And that day I was doing Fire Watch when Jeff Myers came in. And when he came in and he accused us of doing food prep and accused us of not having our Fire Watch phone, but all the while Mike Alderman wasn't even calling the correct number. That is why he came in. And I had to file a report with the independent police review because of the treatment that I received from Jeff Myers. But I just think it's really important for you to know that on that day, he did not accurately describe or represent what was going on. And he put us back into this position of having to have a different fire watch. We were doing everything that we could possibly do to make sure the fire watch was being conducted properly. And it's unfair that someone like that can lie because of a blatant hatred he has for my boss. And I also just want to say that the Greek cuisine has been a part of the Portland landscape for 35 years. My parents used to take me there when I was a kid. And people can vilify Ted Pappas all they want, but I am proud to say that I work for Ted Pappas. A lesser man would have thrown in the towel a year ago, and he hasn't. And you know what? I'm proud of him. I'm proud of what we do. I'm proud of what we stand for. We help people celebrate. We're not there to be, you know, greedy nightclub owners. Our motto is OPA, and that is cheers to life, and that's important to us.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Did the independent police review follow up on your complaint?
They did.
What happened?
Well, actually, I feel really naive because I really thought that I was going to get due process. And what happened was they sent another member of Randy Leonard Tit Squad to interview me. So I don't really feel like my complaints or my concerns really went to anyone who was really concerned about my...
You didn't get a hearing?
I didn't get a hearing. I got an interview with another sergeant.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir?
Reno Josen. I'm Ted's project manager and working with the city. They've been great, by the way, on getting all of the items addressed with the 16 years of questionable activities that have taken on. We're addressing all of the matters. It's just taking some time with engineering and architects. One question I have, Mr. Leonard, is the safety of my crew as important as the safety of the police and the firemen in this town? I believe the answer is yes. I had one of my crew locked up on the sixth floor for 3 hours with no way to get down because those doors were locked. No phone numbers on the inside of the locked doors of who he could contact. Okay, that's not acceptable. Also, as a contractor, I expect reasonable access to the projects I am working on. And that means that those doors should be opened and I should have access to all the areas I'm working. And the fire watch has not allowed me that access. I pay my dues to every entity in this state and this city to continue work, and I employ a lot of people, and we look forward to getting this sorted out and getting everything on track so we can all start dealing with the solutions and not the problems. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishes to testify on this matter? Good afternoon,
Good
sir.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the City Council. You
Thank
just
you.
Need to give
Peter,
us your name.
My name is Peter Rubstein. I've been a resident of this city for all of my life, which is now 68 years. I'm also a resident of New York City, two places at once. My father here began the civic opera movement in Portland. He also was busily involved with the conservatory for many years and with what I would describe as the Republican socialist business of trying to run the business of an impresario in city facilities with attendant city unions married to the procedure. Throughout the period of my father's being in that business, we noted that the business of politics in this city, as apart from the business of running a business, involved regular inducements from city officials to give up money for political campaigns at the most obvious level, for other things at another level. There were city employees in those years disciplined for that sort of thing, people who were charged even with managing the city's halls, and some of them were removed. My wife was worked for Commissioner Mildred Schwab as a special assistant to Commissioner Schwab, who's a fire commissioner. And I don't think that Commissioner Schwab would ever have come forward to the public with a Cheney-like plea about body bags and public safety. The former vice president is now telling us that the current president is endangering the country by his conduct and the way he's running the administration. I think it's really time at every level. The former mayor in this community had a great deal of difficulty with the U.S. attorney and with the federal government about security clearances, and therefore was somewhat at odds with members of his police force who wanted to participate in the FBI's post-9/11 strike force. That post-9/11 strike force reemphasized and reinvigorated a lot of things that had been forbidden to the city and to its police force for a long time about political surveillance in this city. I think really that you have here a serious businessman who satisfies the needs of a major portion of the citizenry of this community and runs a business that those people want to see around. And I think we are really ill served by suggesting body bags or in the case of Mr. Cheney's accusations against the current president, some other kind of Holocaust lies in wait if we're not
careful.
I'm
sorry you're out of time.
I appreciate
your testimony.
Thank you.
Sir.
My name is Theo Pappas. I'm Ted's son. We used to live on the fifth floor before this happened. I lived across the hall from my dad, and when they imposed this hit squad, as Randy Leonard so calls it, and I just want to add to that your comment about our building being one of the worst and most dangerous buildings in downtown Portland, I think is absolutely absurd and a joke. And the fact that you can be the leader of this hit squad as also a member of the city council on this panel, I think you have a real bias and a conflict of interest as leader of this team of people that impose these rules on us. But when we got kicked out, you know, we had to move our things out of the building with nowhere to go. I had to stay with my sister. My father moved in with his brother, and thanks to all the help of our employees, we moved all of our stuff out of the building. Working with these conditions has been not the easiest. Like my father said, we washed the dishes on the second floor. We've moved all of our equipment from the basement to do so. The things that the police, as far as Jeff Myers' statements, with the prep going on in the basement and things of that sort are all lies. I can attest that every week, twice a week, we take people to do our laundry at 14th and Gleason. These men know nothing about food prep, and what they say we've done in the basement is completely absurd. It's been horrible to see what this whole situation has done to my family. My uncle has gone into a difficult mental state. He's no longer working at the restaurant from all the pressure and the stress that's caused from the situation. And also, I can attest to that everything that they said of us not complying with the rules of going to the basement and things of this matter are completely false, because my uncle's son, used to be the executive chef, who at time when this was first imposed, he didn't comply with the rules, and I attest to that. And since he didn't, we fired him. My father fired him. And this is a member of our family that, you know, it was that important to him that we weren't complying with these rules. Our own family member wasn't complying with the rules, so we let him go. I have a lot more to say. I'm sorry.
No, well said. We appreciate your testimony.
I just want to point out that the apartment that you moved from, that was extensively remodeled to create an apartment, never received a permit to create an apartment, couldn't have gotten...
We had our yearly fire inspections every year.
Wait. Didn't get a permit to create the apartment, couldn't have got a permit to create the apartment because it violated the zoning for that building.
My father went to court for the residential laws of that building and did get approved for living up there.
Well, no, it was an illegal occupancy. Still is.
So thank you for your testimony, sir.
Hi, my name is Ryan Newman. I'm just going to speak about the fire watch. I was also trained by Mike Alderman as fire watch. I was there on the incident that Jeff Myers had came to the establishment. I was also there for several of the visits. There was two visits that I'm going to speak about. Was the actually just the one. I'll stick to it. Jeff had came in due to Mike Kahn trying to call a fire phone, which Jeff had Myers had came in approximately around 6 o'clock. He had came into the building, went straight to the basement, found one of our sous chefs downstairs retrieving the schedule that was going to be posted. He had took some pictures of items that were down there. The crazy thing is, again, I'm not a fire marshal or a firefighter or anything, but I am been with food service. And to leave, and I'm sure some of you guys have probably made croutons at home, that you have to leave them out in a dry space. So that is our storage area that we have the bread. So the bread was to be made for croutons. As far as wrapping and packaging, we have to store those items because of the limited space that we have upstairs. So we do use the basement for storage. As far as accessibility, we have three badges that we carry around that we have. We implemented systems for us to be able to access the basement. During the fire watch, we were very active because most of us all knew our jobs were on the line, so we took it with that kind of sincerity, especially with the economy the way it is. It's definitely not plentiful out there. So, again, I can contest that we do go out there and do our laundry outside of the facility. And anyways, that's pretty much it. That we were very dialed in as far as a group, and we had enough people to be able to staff the building, because at one point we had to be an hour in before the employees were to come in and serve the public, and we had to stay an hour after to make sure the building was vacant, and then that's when we would exit. So we had to put in extra hours, long hours. And as far as the financial state, a lot of us took it on personally just to stay in that building to make sure that we can move forward and correct these problems. And to have to go back to square one and to have these financial stresses added to our daily life is just not a fun place. And so, again, here's the other side of the story. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate your testimony. I think what you're saying with, since we had to confer a little bit up here, is that you took the directive very seriously and you sought to follow it to the letter and the spirit of the directive. Is that correct?
Correct. And also we received, I've spoke with Mike Alderman several times as he came up to visits, because I'm pretty much on site 7 days a week.
Okay.
And we've had great comments as far as doing our jobs, coaching and counseling. We would contact him if we haven't heard from him in a while, as far as we'd show him our documentation, because he brought us our own pad of paper, and so on and so forth. So the only issue.
Your other point is that you felt like you had lots of oversight from the Fire Bureau.
Correct. We had a great working relationship, in my opinion.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. You're the last to testify.
Yes. My name is Jimmy Dracos, and I'm a family friend, and I'm kind of a sounding board for Ted. I've been helping him out through this whole process. I was originally called when the fire department, the police department, or what's been called the hit squad, I guess, came down to the building, and Ted called me up at my office in a panic and basically said, I think they're going to arrest me. They're going to shut me down. So I raced down to the building and came down and spoke with all the police officers and the fire marshals and could not get Commissioner Fritz asked a question, what needed to be done to get the building up to code? And I got the same answer that you got, which is basically the same thing when you say something to your dog and it doesn't understand you and they turn their head sideways. I mean, there was no answer. What do you need us to do today to continue? There were some food out on the counters in the basement, but there's a walk-in refrigerator in the basement. I mean, they were allowed to be taking food in and out of that walk-in refrigerator. So throughout the whole process, nobody wanted to work to the point of telling us, what do you need done? We brought people in from another development company that I work for, Avalon Holdings. They brought their top people in that build high-rises all over the Northwest to come in and get a plan together to what was going to suffice the city. And we could not get an answer throughout the whole process. It was just, we're putting a padlock on this door. We're going to put a fire watch. I've been in the building many, many times, even when the city-imposed fire watch was there. And I saw the guy around back smoking a cigarette one day. I mean, how's that watching the building? But that's I just wanted to say that Ted has tried and has bent over backwards to do the things that need to be done. If you just tell him what needs to be done, he's happy to do those things.
Thank you all for your testimony. Really appreciate it. So I think that concludes public testimony. Council, do you want a discussion of council, and or does anyone on council want to bring anyone up from staff for additional questions and answers?
Well, Mayor, I'm ready to vote if the council chooses. I believe that it's a fairly narrow issue before us, and I believe there's other kinds of recourse that we can outline, so I'm prepared to vote.
Commissioner Fritz?
I have heard a lot of information today that is new to me, and I recognize Commissioner Fish's narrowing of the issue to just voting on the lien. However, I've heard questions on whether the fire watch was needed from September 11th onwards. I'd really like to be able to read the Fire Code Board of Appeals record for the appeal that was made to see what was in it and what was not in it. I'd like to read the IPR report, the Independent Police Review report, investigating the allegation that was made of unfairness. And I'm wondering if it would be possible to remove the emergency clause so we could vote on it next week, because I don't really see a compelling need to pass this today rather than next week. And I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Sure. So my comments are, and so that's been moved and seconded by Commissioner Leonard. I appreciate the comments today and the thoughtfulness of both sort of sides, if that's an appropriate way to characterize it, a presentation of those comments. The way I look at this is, if it had been a business that did not contribute so much to the uncertainty of the situation, I might come to a different outcome. But the extensive unpermitted work in an old building that has a very popular restaurant with great food, with a lot of enjoyment taken by many, that has liquor involved. I look at the totality of the situation, That combined with our decision today is whether or not imposing a lien is fair and seems reasonable. If you think that the watch is unnecessary, your course of action is not us. Your course of action is the fire board. And they make the decision to second guess the frontline personnel. But because there are just so many moving parts, and this has gone on for so long, I will support the lien when it comes up for a vote. And I encourage you to work post haste to get everything in order as quickly as possible and appeal to the fire board. And they'll decide whether you need to continue with the fire watch or whether the sprinkling system really does suffice. So that's where I stand when this comes up for a vote. So do we need to take a vote to remove the emergency? It's been moved and seconded. Carla, would you please call the roll on removing the emergency?
Fritz. I greatly appreciate everybody coming in to testify on this, and I would just like another week to think about it. I also commend the work that the city has done, and certainly it's important to make sure that citizens are safe, and I think there's nobody here that disagrees with that. So I appreciate all the comments that have been made and the work of the city staff, and I vote aye on the amendment.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
I also want to thank Commissioner Leonard for taking this on and bringing it to council. He took a lot of shots today, I think unfounded shots. I also want to thank the team, and I look forward to voting on this and seeing this situation resolved and cleaned up. Aye. Moves to a second reading next week. That gets us to... been so long, I lost my place. Could you please read the council item?
283, support existing all non-essential lighting in all city government buildings and public landmarks for the hour between 8:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. on March 28, 2009, in support of Earth Hour, established March 28, 2009 as Earth Hour Day in the city of Portland.
Emerald. Is there any reason that we should keep our lights on between 8:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. on March 28th?
Mayor Adams,
in opposition to Earth Hour. No reason whatsoever?
There is no reason not to. I'll keep my remarks very short in the interest of time. The resolution is to support Earth Hour, which is a symbolic international event sponsored by the World Wildlife Fund. Participants on March 28th at 8:30 p.m. voluntarily turn off non-essential lighting and pledge to take an individual action to reduce their carbon emissions. In Portland, we have secured the support of Ramsey Signs, who will turn off the Made in Oregon sign. The Oregon Convention Center will be turning off the towers. And the Rose Quarter, there's a Blazer game that night. So for Earth Hour, the facility's external lights will be turned off, so it'll look like a non-event night. This year, Portland joins over 1,500 cities and towns and 80 countries all over the world participating in Earth Hour. Our participation has been largely driven by passionate constituents, including Purdy, a painting supply company in North Portland that plans to turn off the lights in the plants, and they've also encouraged all the employees to do it as well. So I will move that along. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you, Emerald. Anyone here that wishes to testify on Council Item 283?
We have five people signed up.
Okay, please come forward.
Brenda Mike Sharkey, and Darren, I believe it's Fettelson.
Fettelson,
thank you.
So because this is already introduced by every member of the City Council, brevity will be rewarded in heaven.
Absolutely.
So please give us your name, and you'll have a few.
Jar Fettelson. I'll be very quick. No need for the timer, Carla. I just want to thank the mayor and the council, City Council, for hopefully endorsing this this event, and I think it's an important thing in these difficult times that we're faced with that we keep this stuff in mind. Tonight, there's a really good show on Discovery Channel with Tom Brokaw talking about whether or not we're beyond the tipping point or not, and so it's very important. I know that the city here is very supportive of these type of measures, so remember, it doesn't mean turn off your headlights. So so that's important. But thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for your advocacy.
You bet.
Hi, I'm Brenda Demery, and I'm here with Mike Sharkey, and we both are from the company Purdy, and we'll keep it brief also and come out and we go along with what he says, that we thank the city for backing items like this. And we have a company with 320 employees there, and we held a company meeting and we told them about this. And I think most of our employees will follow in our lead and do this. And we just wanted to thank the city for hopefully passing this.
Well, thanks for your for your commitment to a good cause. Yeah. Sir?
I just want to second what Brenda said and applaud the city for doing what they do. And just remind everybody that this is a chance to do something that can be extended throughout the year as well. Actually, within our organization, our company, we've also seen that we can actually save a whole bunch of money by wasting less energy. So this may be an opportunity for you to do the same.
And what does Purdy produce or manufacture provide?
We produce paintbrushes, and we're owned by Sherwin-Williams.
And perhaps the best paintbrushes on the planet?
They are, actually.
We'd like to extend a welcome. Yourself, Sam Adams, any of the commissioners, come out and tour our facility. We're out in North Portland.
Goodness knows I bought a lot of your products over the years. So.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for being here today. Has anyone else signed up to testify?
It's Holroyd and Gary Minofsky.
I think we went on too long, and they have left. All right. Unless there's additional council discussion, Carl, would you please call the roll for item 283?
Fritz.
As I noted, I'm reluctant to sign co-sponsor resolutions that not wanting to have the outcome appear predetermined. However, I've spent the last 22 years trying to get my kids to turn off unnecessary lighting, so I couldn't think of a single reason why anybody could.
Now you can show them a resolution.
I know. So we are going to try to do, I would like us to look at how we can do this on an ongoing basis. The Science Club at Jackson Middle School believe that they can save $100,000 this year in reducing unnecessary energy costs, including things like turning off computers and really, really turning off your television rather than just kind of turning off your television. So I appreciate your bringing this resolution to start educating people, and we need to do a lot more of that. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
And I hope we have an exemption for people who have solar panels, lights powered by solar. That would be a nice statement. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you for testifying. Emerald, thanks for your work to get this to council. Aye. 283 is approved. Could you please read the title for council item 284?
Vacate the alley in Block 5, Albina Homestead Edition, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
This is a second reading vote only. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Item approved. Could you please read the title for item 287?
Authorize a $250,000 contract with CSDC Systems, Inc. for continued maintenance and support of the Amanda Computerized Permit Tracking System for Bureau of Development Services.
We'll do anything to get Commissioner Fritz's vote. This is a second reading vote only.
Fritz?
My diligent staff were not able to Google and find out what Amanda is an acronym for, so if anybody is watching and knows, I would love to hear. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
It's not an acronym. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item 287 is approved. Could you please read the title for item 288?
Approve 179 applications and deny 8 applications for the Single Family New Construction Limited Tax Abatement Program from January 1, 2008 to December 31, 2008.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You're what stand between us and lunch. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. We have a replacement resolution that we're going to hand out through a clerical error. 3 fully approved applications, in addition to the 179 approved in the ordinance before you, were left off. We weighed the impact of delaying approval to some future action or simply amending this to include the 3. It seems fair that since it was a clerical error, we just amend to.
So there's been a move to amend. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Anyone that wishes to testify on the amendment? Carl, would you please call the roll on the amendment?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Amendment is approved.
Keith, I'll skip my introduction and go right to you.
Keith Rutkowski, Government Relations, Portland Development Commission.
Javier Mena, Interim Neighborhood Housing Program, PDC.
Do you have the, now, since the screen's not working, do you have the PowerPoint in front of you? I believe they were hard copies.
They're coming around. Coming around.
Okay, so let's just get going. So the what this is, you know, every year by April 1st, we're required to submit to Multnomah County Assessor's Office.
Keith.
Can't hear you. We're required to submit to the assessor's office. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Approved applications for, in this case, the single family limited term tax abatement program. This program allows eligible homeowners property tax abatements on the value of their home for a period of 10 years.
And it goes to the owner.
Yes. The abatement goes to the owner. So, what we have this year is we have 182 approvals we're requesting. One of those was also tied to a clerical error, and in that case, they receive a 9-year abatement and not a 10-year abatement. We've got that specified within the resolution and called that out, and I've had conversations with the county assessor who is comfortable with us having this action today and framing it the way that we framed it in the resolution. So, I'll make this quick. The single-family new construction program is, you know, essentially a program that is administered by the Portland Development Commission and closely tied to the Portland Planning Bureau and the Planning Commission, whereas what the Planning Commission does is identify key areas in the city that they deem distressed. And the idea is you allow these abatements to stimulate development, to create homes, and redevelopment where it would otherwise not have occurred. And I've got some maps of those areas if you'd like to see them. From the Portland Development Commission's perspective, we not only try to achieve those goals, but we also look at it as opportunities to build home ownership within the city of Portland, particularly also focusing on minority home ownership opportunities. So what I'm gonna, this is also, so you're aware, this action today was kind of previously approved. The program is approved through an action that occurred at Multnomah County in the fall of 2007, where they approved, you know, the new family, the single family, and number of other ones to their sunset dates that are tied to state statute. And I believe on this one, the statute on the single family home sunsets in 2012 or thereabouts. So we've got their permission to take this action today and continue to use this program as well. What I'd like to do real quickly is just talk to you a little bit about the nature of people that are have purchased these homes, where they're located, talk a little bit about the demographics, and speak to the financial impact. So if you look at the where are they located, of the 182, and again, this is the pie shape breaks down to 179 because the 182 was a late catch due to the good work of our staff. 75% of them are in southeast Portland, and then the remainder are in northeast Portland and north Portland. If you look at the demographics, remember, in this case, both the building, the builder can receive an abatement to build a home, and the idea is they would sell that home to an eligible homeowner. So today, we're not only approving builder applications that subsequently passed on to eligible homeowners, we're also approving 67 homeowners who have since gone from builder, who wanted the application, who built the home, who then has sold it to eligible homeowners, which means it's being sold, and I'm not going to go through everything, but for less than $275,000, and that the household makes less than $67,500 in terms of the income. So we've got the slides that focus on the breakdown of the ethnicity, the breakdown of the income.
Let's say ethnicity. Where is it at? H4.
H4.
Three, four.
And I think, you know, one thing I would note on this slide is that 47% were also buyers with children, and that's one of the reasons that Portland Public Schools also approved this program. So
does council have any questions for our esteemed panel? Anything you'd like to add?
Well, Mayor, I'll just point out that there are reasons given for the 8 denials, which are in our document, in case there's any public testimony. If someone wants to come following this, but the basis for the granting and the denials are set forth. The authority, shared joint authority of city and county to do this. The guidelines have been met. This has been vetted, and this is before us. There may be testimony from someone who may object to a denial.
Sir, any?
The only thing that I would add, Mayor, is that
your name?
Javier Mena from Department of Development Commission, is that we are continuously auditing our program and also looking at from the builders that came in last year and were at the abatements were activated and what's happening with those, where the home buyers and roughly we have about 216 units, kind of give you an inventory of what's out there, roughly about 216 units of abated properties, including last year, as to what's available for abatement for first-time home buyers. So it's a good time to buy a house here in the city of Portland.
Here, here. All right. Unless there's additional questions, do we have anyone signed up?
We have two people, Thomas O'Keefe and Alan Prokop.
If you'll come back after we hear this.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Thank you for waiting. Sorry for the long wait. You need to only give us your name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Alan Prokop. Should I start?
Please.
I think she handed you the...
She'll do it right now.
And I'll read it within 3 minutes. I applied for the single-family new construction limited tax exemption offered by the Portland Development Commission. My application was determined to be ineligible because the house was moved to the site and not entirely newly constructed. I'm appealing this decision based on the following. This is a single-unit house that has been newly added to the tax abatement area, and all the permits and work have been considered new construction by the city throughout the process. The city land use office made me divide my lot into three lots under requirements of the new land use criteria. I wanted to divide it originally into two halves, but couldn't because of the minimum density requirement. For new construction on subdivisions, I will be paying taxes now on a third undeveloped lot. And since the west side of Southeast 77th, which is my side of the street, is a dirt road, I'm now required to put in pavement, sidewalk, and 8 feet wide concrete swales in front of the property in compliance with the new land use criteria. I will be the only property on my side of the street to have a sidewalk, et cetera. The rest of it will be dirt for the other homeowners. And the PDOT fees for permits and plan reviews for this right-of-way improvement are about $9,500. The actual work is going to cost me $20,000. I also have to construct a sidewalk, driveway, and swale approximately 200 feet long throughout the property. I feel it is unfair and inconsistent to apply new land use criteria without giving me the benefit of new construction status. And this house is much better of an addition and enhancement to the neighborhood than the 41 houses that were newly built across the street from me. It is circa 1917 construction, solidly built old growth timber with no particle board, plastic, or non-recyclable siding, no wall-to-wall acrylic carpeting or plastic laminate flooring. Some new house construction in Portland is being done with almost entirely recycled materials and should be encouraged. Mine was recycled too, but it was more assembled to begin with. And I'm spending as much on permits, reviews, actual construction, engineering, surveying, soil and tree tests and reports, and the swales and storm water management as I would have spent on a house built from scratch.
Mr. Prokop, if I could just respond briefly. We'll hear from staff briefly after you're both through with your presentations. But one of the challenges that we have is that we have very strict guidelines we are required to follow. And if we don't follow them, the county won't remove the property from the tax rolls. And so what I want you to know is we, from time to time, hear very passionate, very compelling appeals from citizens who are seeking to fit within one of our tax abatement programs. And I will tell you, as the housing commissioner, were it within my authority to modify from time to time the proposals to meet the compelling arguments raised by citizens, you know, my heart and my head would be in conflict. There are some very technical rules we have to apply. This may very well come down to a question of just simply whether it's new construction within the meaning of the statute in this property. But in whatever ruling the council makes on this, I just want you to know that we're bound by a set of rules, and we hear you, and you have made some arguments in writing that are quite compelling. But we have a very narrow question before us that we have to rule on. Thank you.
Mr. O'Keefe, nice to see you.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning, or it's afternoon now, commissioners. My concern is loss of revenue to schools, county, and, of course, the city of Portland. I think that this particular program Not only is cost and lost revenue, but it's going to provide unfair competition to other individuals that want to sell their homes because of the abatements. And I believe that this particular PDC calls it the homeowner opportunity area. State statute calls it single-unit housing distressed area. This is a large swath of land that runs from North Portland out to Southeast Portland. And builders are allowed to use the 120% rule. So if you look at the bottom of your statistics, the average price of a home built that's going to receive the abatement is $244,744. The medium, using the regional multiple listing service for Portland, in the southeast, it runs from $206,000 to $220,000. In North Portland, it's $232,000. So you've overbuilt homes that are in these neighborhoods, which will put the burden on current residents for additional potential tax liability. This program, to me, with 120% rule, they're allowed to overbuild the neighborhood. So you take a, as was mentioned earlier, they can build a house up to $275,000, which they, and you all, in this program, you have the 100% medium income requirement, which is mentioned, $67,500. And so, to me, these are individuals that can afford to pay school taxes. And you're given an advantage to the developer as you look at the ethnicity breakdown of who's buying these homes. You're only putting in about 70 people, and it's a great cross-section. Though the other people that are buying these are developers who are receiving the tax abatement, who will use the tax abatement as an inducement to sell that property, and hopefully, and so as they build a house, they'll use these numbers to build the house in order to look for a person that's making at the $65,000 level. And so when they pencil this out, it'd be easier to get the monies from the lender. Now, the federal government has their own help coming to first-time home buyers of $7,500 of a interest-free loan over 15 years. And so I see this as the developers have figured a way out to pencil this out in favor. If you look at the list of the people that are qualified, they're custom home builders. Now, I don't have any problem with Habitat for Humanity and the other ones, but the other ones are taking advantage of this system, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Keith. Thank you both for your testimony.
Keith, could you come up and just address Mr. Prokop's?
You can return to your seats. Thank you very much.
I believe in your chart, I believe it's listed on the bottom of your chart as you being denied.
Sir, you can return to your seat as well. Thank you for your testimony. Really appreciate it.
This is the property 8515 Southeast 77th Avenue. And in Mr. Prokop's letter to the council, he acknowledges that the house was not entirely newly constructed at the site. So could you just give us the statutory basis for the denial?
Certainly. Javier Mena, PDC, and also with me is...
I'm Dori Van Bockel, also from the Portland Development Commission.
And basically, she's the actual work we went on with Marilyn Hurley that work on the abatement database and the clients and service them. When the application came in, it was the permit that was received. It showed as a moved property, not a new construction. And also, as we looked through the ORS code in regard to manufactured home, it did not, there was nowhere in within the code that kind of allowed us to proceed with the application and approve that process. Also, having had the experience with the county as to how strict the review those RS codes and for that specific reason of tax abatement is that the rule came out at declining the request. Do you have any additional information?
No,
I don't. Thank you.
I have a question. Ask my question.
Commissioner Fritz.
What's the concern that was raised by Mr. O'Keefe in terms of this 70
four homeowners that have been identified. How did the developers make sure that the new owner qualifies?
We actually make the program is specifically for first-time home buyers that meet that income guideline and purchase at that limited price acquisition. And so when a builder, when there's a home buyer for that unit, that in order for them to qualify,